Good afternoon. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome and thank you for joining the Recordati to acquire of EUSA Pharma conference call. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Ms. Federica De Medici, Investor Relations and Corporate Communications. Please go ahead, madam.
Thank you, Judith. Good afternoon or good morning, everyone, and thank you for attending the conference call today. I'm pleased to be here with our new chairman, Andrea Recordati, our new CEO, Rob Koremans, and Luigi La Corte, our CFO, and Gabriele Filizzi, Head of Business Development, and Corrado Casteducci, Head of Recordati Rare Disease. With a short presentation, we will provide more color on the strategic rationale and present the transaction in more detail. A set of slides is available on our website under the investor section. At the end of the presentation, we will answer any question you may have. I now leave the floor to Andrea. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon and morning, everyone. Thank you for attending our conference call today, where we're pleased to give you some more color around the transaction that we just announced this morning. A transaction that we feel offers great growth opportunity and also enhances our opportunity to further build scale in a new, for us, and very attractive and undeserved therapeutic area, and therefore a further diversification further for our rare disease business. In line with our strategy of complementing organic growth with value-accretive M&A, we see the acquisition of EUSA Pharma as an excellent opportunity to further expand, like I said, and reinforce our rare disease franchise by building on top of the businesses which have already demonstrated solid organic growth, being clearly metabolic and endocrinology, as recently communicated in our Q3 2021 results. The acquisition broadens Recordati Rare Disease's therapeutic focus, with the entry into the rare and niche oncology area, and is another step in fulfilling our mission to improve the lives of patients by delivering treatments that address serious unmet medical needs. We are acquiring not only one single product, but a well-diversified portfolio of products, adding in-market assets with a growing trajectory, a portfolio which is expected to generate over 150 million euros of revenue by 2023, and with expected peak sales of around 250 million euros. Just a few words on the main product and the products of the portfolio. Qarziba is an anti-GD2 monoclonal antibody. It's the first product approved in Europe, indicated for high-risk neuroblastoma, approved for both new and refractory patients in the EU and other countries, with a potential future expansion in the US and China. Silvent, an anti-IL-6 monoclonal antibody, also has a strong potential since it's the first and only one approved product for idiopathic multicentric Castleman's disease, IMCD, in the US and EU. This product has the US as the main current market, but we expect a global growth potential for said product. Fotivda is an oral, highly selective, small molecule tyrosine kinase inhibitor, approved for first-line treatment of advanced renal cell carcinoma. And Capsothol is a global medical device for oral mucositis due to the chemo and radiotherapy, a niche product sold globally. With the acquisition, we are also going to complement our existing global footprint and expertise with new capabilities, which will provide a platform for future expansion and future and further expansion in these areas. This transaction is clearly very coherent with our strategy of growth, acquiring assets, able to create long-term value, and we expect EUSA to contribute approximately 50 million of EBITDA level in 2023, and with EBITDA margins in line with the rare disease segment. If you could turn to the next page, please. So this slide aims to provide you with a bit more color around the company that we are acquiring. EUSA is a world-class biopharmaceutical company, with current main reference market being EMEA, which represents almost 70% of sales, but with good future growth potential also in the US, which is currently at 20% of sales. The pie chart shows a breakdown of the last 12 months net sales at the 30th of June of 2021, which are approximately 130 million. It has a global commercial presence for direct operations, mainly in the US and in EU and in the US, and also some presence in other countries globally, and complemented also with strategic partnerships where they don't have a direct presence. The company has a profitable cash and generating business and a unique and diversified portfolio of four rare and niche oncology products, as I said, with a growing trajectory. Company overall employs more than 200 people with a strong patient-centric culture and a leading disease area expertise, which will surely be complementary to Recordati's know-how. As we're adding a new specialty, rare and niche oncology, to our product portfolio, we want to focus on maintaining skills, knowledge, business know-how, customer relations, and interactions, and continue delivering crucial therapy options for patients and obviously the healthcare providers. Qarziba and Sylvant combined represent more than 80% of EUSA revenue. We are protected, these two products are protected by long-lasting patent protection and market exclusivity, as you can see at the bottom part of the slide, but are also biological products with complex manufacturing processes, which makes them, which we feel gives them further protection versus potential generic entry, also post-patent expiry. This portfolio of transformative, unique assets is managed for a highly efficient and commercial infrastructure, like I mentioned before, with globally market access through direct presence selected partnerships, which is obviously offers Recordati a platform for future expansion in this area. Moving on to the next slide, financial snapshot. So here we want to give you a bit more details clearly around, you know, the transaction, the actual transaction details. As mentioned, we expect the acquisition to contribute 150 million of sales in 2023 with peak sales of 250 million. An EBITDA level that we expect to be around 50 million by 2023, with ongoing margin in line with the average of a rare disease segment. Some non-recurring costs in 2022 and 2023 will come from ongoing manufacturing tech transfers and also the acquisition integration expenses, which are estimated to be around 35 million, and clearly are also subject to the timing of the closing. The value of the transaction, i.e. the enterprise value, is of 750 million euros, and the payment of the consideration will be funded by existing liquidity and bridge financing fully underwritten by JP Morgan and Mediobanca. It's a healthy cash-generating business, I'd like to stress, with net debt of 26 million at the 30th of June of this year. We expect our leverage after the transaction to be below 2.5 times at closing and to return below 2 times by 2023. The transaction does not change our dividend policy, which is confirmed to be around 60% of reported consolidated net income. As for the timing, like I mentioned, the closing of the transaction is subject to regulatory clearances, as is normal in these cases, and is expected to take place in the first half of 2022. And that brings me at the end of our first kind of, you know, run through the acquisition of EUSA Pharma. So I think we can switch now to the Q&A session. Thank you.
Excuse me, this is the Chorus Call conference operator. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. To remove yourself from the question queue, please press star and two. Please pick up the receiver when asking questions. Anyone who has a question may press star and one at this time. The first question is from Brian Balkin with Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hey, yeah, thanks for the questions. So just a few, if I may. How much of that 250 million peak sales is tied to the U.S. approval of Qarziba? And also, what kind of growth rates can we expect for the ESA products? Should we be thinking that they'd be in line with your current orphan portfolio? And then secondly, can you just confirm that 50 million EBITDA in 2023 is adjusting out integration costs, or if we'd need to wait until 2024 for a clean EBITDA? And then finally, if I could just squeeze in one more, if you could tell us the incremental interest costs associated with the financing package as well, that would be great. Cheers. Thank you.
Hi, Brian. It's Luigi. Thanks for the questions. I'll take the last two first. EBITDA excludes non-recurring cost. As always, we do expect 2023 to still see investment behind the global growth opportunity of Sylvant, and as we prepare for potential development of Qarziba for the US. So yeah, it's like a peak or let's say going rate of margin will come post 2023, but we're not going to give sort of a specific date for that. On the financing expenses, I think you can sort of safely assume a sort of level of financing charge in line with the sort of current financing costs of Recordati, and clearly it'll depend also on the sort of market conditions at the time that we actually close the deal in 2022. With regards to your first question, frankly, we've not closed this deal yet. It's not our business at this point in time. We're not going to give sort of breakouts of revenues by
product. It is also confidential information, and as Luigi just explained, that we haven't closed the deal yet, so we cannot get into the sort of details at this time.
So hopefully,
I hope you appreciate that. Thanks.
The next question is from Niccolò Storer with Kepler. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. My first question is on upside risk that you see on the 250 million guidance. Do you see some upside in this sense or not? We all remember of Isturisa's first indication, which were very low and subsequently raised by big amounts. And the second question is on the ramp-up in profitability, which you see on this portfolio of products, starting from some 30% in 2023, to a number more aligned to your orphan drug portfolio, so more in the 50% region. So which are the drivers behind this growth? Is just volume or is there something else? Thank you.
Hi, Niccolò. Thank you. It's Luigi. I think in terms of the margin driver, really it's going to be the operating leverage, right? As Andrea mentioned, this is a portfolio of products of high growth. We are expecting, as you've seen, sort of numbers for significant sort of revenue accretion over the years, and that will drive the margin improvement that we expect year on year. With 2023 still expected to be a year of investment on the peak sales, that is it's our best estimate at current, and I would just caution in drawing too much from parallels with Endo. I think on a number of occasions, hopefully I was able to explain, a number of things factually sort of evolved since the Endo deal was announced in 2019. We had an earlier than expected approval in US of Isturisa. We had the readout, positive readout of the second study, the Link 4. We had very strong endorsement in Europe at the time that the orphan drug designation was confirmed, all things which were not a given or known at the time the deal was done. So, the 250 million that we've set out today is, our best estimate of the potential at this point in time.
Thank you.
The next question is from Martino De Ambrogi with Equita. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Good morning, everybody. Two questions on the deal. If I know, it's probably not possible to answer, but just to have an idea of what is the starting EBITDA margin for the acquisition, and am I right in assuming peak sales towards the end of the decade, looking at the patent expiries for the four products? Third question on the R&D, is there any change in your R&D going forward following the acquisition, assuming you have to spend more money for the final process, or probably you have milestones, I don't know if you can disclose it. And the last question is on the guidance. You provided the 2023 guidance. Am I right in assuming that through this acquisition, you are probably approaching, if not achieving, at the low end of your ranges. And through this acquisition, your free cash flow on annual basis is moving towards the $500 million already in probably 2024.
Okay, Martino, thank you. That's quite a few questions. I'll try and see if I can briefly hit on all of them. And you guess right. I mean, on some of them, I'm not going to be able to say much. I mean, when we'll reach peak, you know, that is something that we don't typically disclose. Hopefully, we've given you some direction already, again, on a deal which hasn't yet closed. We're not sort of giving, for similar reasons, sort of current EBITDA in the sense of sort of current trading, simply because that's not going to be relevant for us for a number of reasons, including the fact that the deal closes in 2022, and we still don't know at which point exactly in 2022. Though again, there we've made an estimate. It would have done a number of changes over the course of 2021. So frankly, 2021 is completely irrelevant. R&D cost, yes, there'll be, you know, we're not going to give now sort of estimated sort of breakouts of the P&L. Again, we've given you a guidance on EBITDA contribution that we expect. I think R&D costs will reflect, you know, for sure a level of amortization charge that will be triggered once we've done the purchase price allocation, you know, post-closing. And yes, there will be a bit more R&D cash costs behind the development of Carceba for the U.S. But, you know, we'll provide more details on all this when we once we've closed the deal and are ready to speak about it a bit more freely. The deal is consistent with our three-year planning strategy. We always said 2023 guidance included BD. So there's no change there from our point of view. And, you know, free cash flow, the $500 million, I'm not sure I can sort of comment on that number in terms of when we will reach it. Again, you know, we gave a guidance for EBITDA for 2023, which, you know, is a pretty sort of close proxy. And we're saying today we still feel we're in line with that guidance. Hopefully, Martino, that addresses your questions.
Yeah, thank you. Just a follow-up, if I may. I know your guidance in 2023 already include some acquisitions, but my question was, is it enough to fill in the gap, including this acquisition? So whatever will come is probably an add-on on the possibility to achieve the guidance, which is probably already visible through the last acquisition?
Martino, as you know, we never gave an exact split of what is organic and inorganic because it's not as simple as that. I think we've given, when we did the plan in May, you know, some, you know, I think quite some perspective on the expectation growth potential of the organic, the current business. We took a view on the potential contribution of BD and then sort of looked at that in the round and set a range for the guidance. And I know that has been asked many times, but, you know, we see it as a number. So I'm not now going to comment on, you know, what this deal, where it positions exactly within that that range, to be honest.
It's a big step.
Okay,
sir,
thank you.
The next question is from Joe Walton with Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Just a few, please. I'm assuming that the majority of the uplift in opportunity that you see is from the Carceba product potentially going into the US. Now, when, I don't know how you pronounce USA, Pharma, when the company who bought this bought it in 2016, they said in their press release that they were expecting to file it in the US in 2017, and yet it's still not there. If you look at their website, there doesn't seem to be any clinical study ongoing at the moment that would be pivotal enough to support a US entry. So could you just give us some idea of the timeline for getting that product into the US, and if we're correct that that is the major growth opportunity that you see within the portfolio? The second one is just your comment on manufacturing technology transfer. Presumably, particularly for the complex monoclonal antibodies, you're not making that. So is the manufacturing technology transfer for the tivosanib or the mouthwash product? Just trying to understand that. And then just as we have the deal starting and you've got to transfer your market authorizations, et cetera, are we going to have the same sort of distortion to your earnings that we normally get when you get a product coming in? So we don't see the revenue to start with. We just see the gross profit contribution. So initially, it looks like you get, you know, the higher margin. I know we've had this with Eligard, we've had it with Isturisa, but this is, you know, a bigger deal potentially.
Look, Joe, I mean, the two drivers, I mean, growth drivers of this portfolio, if I understand the question correctly, the first question, are it is Qarziba in the U.S. We are excited about the prospect of obviously potentially bringing Qarziba in the U.S. market, but we will discuss, you know, obviously, as I said, we said before, we're still, you know, between a signing and closing kind of, you know, situation, so we need to discuss this, you know, closer with the user, and it's not really appropriate to give more details at this stage. I can tell you that obviously that is an important driver of growth in the plan, but at the same time, we also see a lot of potential and a lot of the growth that we expect to get into this portfolio is also coming from Sylvant. So that is going to be a very, very important driver of growth as well. Okay? Regarding the second question, you asked so many questions.
Yeah, I'll take the next two. I think the second one was around tech transfer. You would have noticed the word says ongoing. So this is a tech transfer which is already ongoing at the level of EUSA on the products. And I think on the other one, on sort of marketing authorization transfers and sometimes the effect that has on the accounting, that's not the case in this transaction when we're buying a company. So there won't be any of that in this specific case, Joe. I mean, there'll be obviously we'll consolidate as and when the deal completes, but there's none of the effects that we discussed on for the Signifor deal or the Eligard deal, if that's what you're referencing.
And can I ask the 200 odd people that work for this company? Can you give us some sense of what proportion of those are in marketing, you know, in the field promoting these products? What degree there is any internal R&D? And all of these products were acquired into the company. They weren't developed within it, but presumably they are running clinical studies, and this could be a meaningful addition to your R&D unit. So just to get some sense of that. And a final one would be, just so that we really understand this, what do you think you can do better with these assets than the prior management were able to do? Is it something whereby you can immediately give these products more support in the markets that they're in and accelerate the growth? Or is this something where you're prepared to effectively pay the premium because you need their expertise? Just trying to understand the driver for this.
Hi, Joe. This is Rob Cormans. Pleasure to talk to you. I mean, the current asset under EUSA is actually doing fairly well. There's a nice growth. So it's not that we will all of a sudden do magic. These are good products that are performing quite nicely. With Qarziba in the U.S. on top, it could actually grow faster. But this is a very nice growing business with very, very competent people. And we continue to do that. We do not have very specific deep therapeutical know-how in rare disease oncology. So yes, we will depend on the people there, and we believe culturally they fit fantastically to us. We can't give a split out on the company that we don't yet own for obvious reasons, but we look forward to integrating them as fast as we can after we get the clearance. And we believe that this is an incredibly nice addition to our company, both in culture and fit in strategy. And like I said a couple of times already, the products are on the market, are profitable and growing, and we believe we can do a little bit to help and accelerate that. But the potential is in the products itself, already there with the people that are promoting it. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, it just the size of the R&D element, just to get a sense, do they have, I mean, you've admitted you don't have much knowledge in this rare disease area, and companies that are successful here tend to have really deep knowledge in this area, fantastic relationships with the relevant doctors, etc. You're confident that you're going to be acquiring all of that with this company. You know, it's fully fledged with that expertise on board.
Yes. The answer is yes. We will be acquiring, and we will be, like I said also in the presentation, I think, our objective is to retain the know-how and the organization. This is not a synergies-driven deal. This is a growth-driven deal, okay? And also, obviously, a diversification deal, like I mentioned, because it allows us to enter a new and very attractive and underserved therapeutic area where we don't have the actual expertise, both a commercial level and also R&D operations. So we will be aiming to retain this know-how in the company because we think there's a lot of value in it, obviously.
Thank you. That's very clear.
Thank you, Joe.
The next question is from Keyur Parekh with Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good afternoon and congratulations on the transaction. If I may please. The first one is, if you look at the last 12 months revenue for the assets you're acquiring at $130 million and your guidance of $150 million in 2023, kind of by my math, that would give you kind of mid-single digit revenue growth for these assets over that period. Excluding the U.S. expansion, is that a good ballpoint for us to think about the future growth of these assets? That's question number one. And then question number two, just following on Joe's question, what do you see as the rate-limiting factors or the critical steps between now and the U.S. approval of this molecule? Thank you.
Hi, Gabriel, it's Rob. I think you're sort of right in the assumption that is giving us a fairly good way of looking at growth potential without the U.S. I think like within any rare disease, what is one of the limiting factors is the ability to bring in often very difficult to spot and diagnose patients and get them into therapy, right? So that is something that is not going to be different from anything else that we do in rare disease. And that's where we can probably also help and drive this. But focusing on getting patients in and then giving them the unique opportunity to be treated with these beautiful products, I think that's what will be our first and foremost focus once the deal is approved by the authorities.
The next question is from Jeff Cotterham with Barings. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the presentation. Just a quick question on the financing. The bridge structure, is that coming in at the OpCo level or is that coming in at the HoldCo level where the existing Rossini debt trades is placed? And also, the bridge financing, how do you plan to take this out once the transaction closes?
Hi, thanks for the question. And there's nothing to do with Rossini in this. Clearly we're discussing a Recordati transaction. The bridge financing is going to be at the level of Recordati, SPA. As far as sort of the takeout is concerned, again, you know, we don't know exactly when the deal will close. We'll decide on the details of that. Closer to the date in 2022 when we have more visibility and depending on the market conditions at the time. We have quite some discretion around how we do that, and obviously we'll do that, depending on what the market looks like at that stage. And as I said, I would expect a level of cost on that, which is, broadly consistent with our current sort of financing costs. I hope that makes sense and is clear.
Sure. And can I just ask, at the OpCo level, do you have a maintenance covenant at that level?
We have our sort of debt covenants are 3x net debt to EBITDA, if that's the question.
At the OpCo. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, for me, there is no opco or holdco. I mean, there is Recordati, and that's it. That's all I'm frankly focused on, and we are all dedicated to here on this call today.
Perfect. And apologies. So 3x is what you can go up to. What is the leverage right now?
So as we said, it was at Q3, it was 1.23. I think you'll find in the slides, we expect at the time of close to be below 2.5 times on a pro forma basis, and to be below 2 times, by 2023.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
The next question is from Giorgio Tavolini with Intermonte. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening and good afternoon and good morning, everybody, and thanks for taking my questions. I was wondering if you could provide some update on your 2022 expectations. I mean, what's your level of confidence on 2022 consensus pending the uncertainty on the deal closing in H1 or later in the year, and the visibility on the current trading? The second question is on synergies. Do you expect to achieve synergies on costs over time once you integrated the 4 drugs in your rare disease organization? And the last one is on the current split on rare disease and special and primary care. Now you have almost reached the 30% of your sales from the rare diseases. I was wondering, and you accomplished more than accomplished your target of in excess of 25% of sales from the rare disease. So I was wondering if we should expect further M&A in more in the primary specialty care business. Thanks.
Okay, Giorgio, thank you. Thanks very much for the question. So I'll take start with the first two in terms of expectations. So far we are sort of remain on track to deliver on the guidance that we recently set out for 2021, albeit as we said at the bottom end of it. And I've already mentioned, I reconfirm, we are on track, we feel, to deliver on our 2023 guidance. With regards to 2022, I mean, as you know, and customary, we have not given a sort of a guidance yet, and we would do that early next year, as we've always done. You've asked to sort of comment on consensus. And at this stage, I think consensus is, from my point of view, for 2022, maybe a fairly simplistically drawing a straight line between 2021 and 2023 guidance, which, frankly, I don't think is fully realistic, because you recall when we set out with the 3-year plan, I think we said very clearly that 2022 will be effectively a year of investment behind Isturisa in Europe, as and when we progressively gain reimbursement in the key European markets, with revenue in Europe on Isturisa accelerating, as soon as effectively those gates are open. And I don't feel that's perhaps been captured enough. The other thing I'd mention, obviously, we've said before, our P&L, unlike that of other sectors, is very resilient to what we're seeing in terms of inflationary pressures. It's not immune. So to the extent that they sort of persist, you might see a little bit a sort of near-term and short-term impact from that. But we're talking here sort of 0.5 sort of percent margin level. We'll provide a crisper view, as we've always done, for 2022 early in the year, and we'll see where we are with the regulatory process to see what we would build in that for this transaction. In terms of the synergies, I think Andres already said it very clearly, and I think Rob has echoed it, and I'll sort of say it as well. This deal is not about synergies. We are buying, four assets which are doing really well, and it's about growth and complementarity of capabilities and diversification. So hopefully that's clear. On the split, if you just do the maths, this would take us at around, probably close to 30% rare disease. But we've always said we continue to be committed to both businesses. They're both great businesses with great potential, we feel. And, we'll continue to look for BD opportunities on either side.
Like we're doing at this moment in time. Let me add.
So I hope that Giorgio addresses that. I hope that hit all the questions you'd asked.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Very clear.
The next question is from Isacco Brambilla with Mediobanca. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. A couple of questions from my side. The first one is on the R&D pipeline from the target company. Is there any relevant product candidate in the clinical development process beyond the four products already disclosed and on the market? And the second question is on your comments in the press release, in the presentation, of the very nice fit of this acquisition, potentially a platform for future expansion in oncology. Should we expect this area to be a growing catalyst of your M&A interest in the future?
So regarding the regarding the internal pipeline, if I understood your question correctly, the internal pipeline, today there's no other candidates in the pipeline, okay? There's obviously the approval of Carzip in the U.S., which is an ongoing clinical trial, and this is, it stops at that. The other question was regarding the attractiveness of doing more in oncology, in rare and niche oncology, okay? Rare and niche oncology. This is important. We're not talking about oncology. We're talking about rare and niche oncology. Yes, obviously we are going to start looking. This is, like I tried to get across in the presentation, is going to add another pillar for us to grow on and also find new opportunities to reinforce our portfolio. But it doesn't mean that we're going to stop, looking for new opportunities for expansion and growth in the endocrinology and metabolics. What is attractive about this deal is that we're actually adding a third therapeutic area, or call it pillar, to our rare disease franchise, in order to allow us more optionality and more opportunities to grow the business in its entirety, in the years to come.
And maybe to add, and that's specifically for rare disease oncology, there is a large unmet need, so this is a good field to focus on,
yeah.
And that's the platform that has been referred to in the press release.
Very clear. Many thanks.
The next question is from Bart Shaw with Citadel Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Apologies if you've answered this earlier. I joined it late. Can you provide the split plan between debt and your use of own resources for this deal? Thanks.
I just heard that the you asked about the split of something, but I'm not sure I understood the split of what about that. Sorry, can you repeat
The financing split in this own cash flow and the financing that you would use. On this?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
The bridge financing, its size is $650 million, but, we'll see. Sorry, there's a lot of background noise. We'll see at the time, how much of that we feel we need. And hopefully that provides you a sense. I hope I've understood.
Good. Thank you. Yeah.
As a reminder, if you wish to register for a question, please press star and one on your telephone. The next question is a follow-up from Niccolò Storer with Kepler. Please go ahead. Mr. Storer, your line is open.
Yes, sorry. Can you please give us an idea of market of for Quartziba, in the sense that I'm reading on your slides that it is number one product in Europe. How's the market structure in Europe and maybe also in the US? Thank you.
So, Nico, I think at this moment we don't really should go into that level of detail. I'm happy to do that once the company is really, when the deal is approved, and we can say more. But I don't think that we should be doing this now. I hope you appreciate.
Yeah, thank you.
The next question is from Navid Mukhtar with PGIM. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Quick question from me. As you're buying a company rather than assets, can you maybe talk a bit about any liabilities that you're also bringing on, maybe any kind of litigation or any regulatory issues that the company may be involved in that you're buying? Thank you.
The simple answer is none.
Well, there's net debt of 26 million. I don't think it'd be appropriate to name them. Obviously, we've done a due diligence. We're very happy with the deal. Hopefully, you've seen that reflected also in the tone of this call. So the short answer is, to the extent that we can comment, we don't feel there's any issues of note.
No reason not to do this.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Maybe the last question?
Yeah.
Okay, I think
later we probably have time for just one last question.
For any further questions, please press star and one on your telephone. Gentlemen, there are no more questions registered at this time.
Okay, thank you very much, everybody, for connecting on this call. As Luigi said, we're extremely excited for this deal for Recordati. I think it's a fantastic deal. It would bring growth, new diversification, optionality, reinforcement of a portfolio, a very competent organization that would become part of the Recordati group. And so I really hope you all take away from this that it's a very, very positive deal for the group going forward. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining. The conference is now over, and you may disconnect your telephones.